Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT for November 1st, 2022. I am your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com if you guys would like to check out what I thought of the show. But here with me to talk about NXT tonight is Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hi.
Hey, I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_253. You can also find my report for tonight's NXT show up at pwtorch.com and on the VIP side, and some analysis as well.
Analysis, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to get into the main event here tonight. Let's talk about the main event. Where did my notes go here? Wow, I don't know what happened to my notes, but the main event was Wesley and Bron Breakker versus Pretty Deadly. Earlier in the night, we had Bron Breakker open the show, came out and basically kind of thanked the fans for Halloween Havoc and talked up his win at Halloween Havoc. Pretty Deadly came out interrupting him, barking at him like a dog, and kind of devolved into Bron Breakker mocking their accent, Pretty Deadly's accent, and Wesley comes down to the ring, and before you know it, we've got a tag team championship match booked for the main event, where the NXT champion and the NXT North American champion were facing the NXT tag team champions, Pretty Deadly, in the main event here tonight. It was a pretty decent match. We had Pretty Deadly retain after some interference from Carmelo Hayes, where he interfered after Wesley was on the top rope, about to do some sort of a cool move off the top rope, I'm sure, but was ended up getting pushed by Carmelo Hayes off the top. The referee didn't see it and allowed Pretty Deadly to pick up the win shortly thereafter. Coming into the match tonight, I had a feeling we were probably going to see something along these lines. I didn't think that we were going to see Pretty Deadly lose their titles to Bron Breakker and Wesley. I didn't think they'd want to put all of the gold on just two people, or all of the gold for the men on just two people. But I also thought it was too early for Pretty Deadly to lose. However, I didn't think we'd want to see the North American champion and the NXT champion lose cleanly. So I figured there was going to be some shenanigans here tonight. I think Carmelo Hayes' interference interference on Wesley made a lot of sense in the story, where Wesley is the new North American champion. And Carmelo Hayes, that's his title as far as he's concerned, and he's looking to get it back. So I think all of it made sense. The match itself was a fun match, pretty energetic. Bron Breakker looked explosive here tonight. I really liked the energy that he brought in after the hot tag. But Bruce, what'd you think of the main event?
I thought that the main event was, in the best way possible, a pretty standard tag team match. You had the heels playing the heels, cutting off the ring. One of the baby faces who can build up that heel heat by taking all those bumps, doing all that, and then the real the heavy of the team coming in to get the big comeback segment. That's pretty much what tag team wrestling is built on, and we had that here, and it worked. I don't think this match was bad in any sense. I don't think there were any missed time spots. The only thing that was kind of iffy was that simultaneous Frankensteiner spot where Breakker kind of jumped a little too early and almost landed right on his neck as he flipped back to throw one of them out. But beyond that, it was a pretty good match. I wasn't paying as much attention to Breakker as you were. I just had I was just trying to go through a lot between the report and what was going on the screen. But, you know, Wesley is one of those wrestlers who excels at taking those bumps, building up the yearning for the crowd to want to see the babyface come back. And, you know, sometimes I just think about when he's chokeslam, he just looks like his body gets folded up in half, and him on being able to bump like that and not be, you know, I can't really say how hurt he is, but to take these kind of bumps and not be put on the shelf for a while. So like you said, the interference makes sense. This was the only non-singles match of the night, and it was the main event title match, so I think that was also an interesting thing to note. as this was the only, also, I guess, I said Odyssey Jones, Javier Bernal, but I guess this match also didn't really have any build to it besides the opening segment. So I called this a very a story building heavy night where every match was either building from or building to something new. And this was kind of just, I think there, because they knew with what they had planned tonight, they needed something bigger for the main event because none of the matches they had planned for tonight, I think, could have qualified for that spot.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, you know, we could have put R-Truth in the main event. Maybe if he was in the main event, he wouldn't have got injured, that which sucks. We'll talk about that a little bit later, I'm sure. But R-Truth belongs in the main event, and he's in the main event of my heart. That's what matters. That's what matters. All right, let's go over to the phone lines and open up to you guys to open up the conversation to you guys and talk about the rest of the show. We're going to go to 814. I'm pretty sure this is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, but my memory sucks with phone numbers. So 814, you should have just heard on mute. Go ahead and let us know what you saw of the show.
It was a pretty action-packed show tonight.
All right, I was right. I was right. It was Ryan. All right, thought it was an action-packed show. What do you got for us? What do you got for us tonight?
First question is on Ava Raine. She made a comment that there are people that she's known for years in WWE that didn't contact her while she was injured. Do you know who those people could be? Because I just couldn't put my finger on that.
I don't know if there necessarily even were people that didn't call. I mean, I'm sure there were people that didn't, you know, necessarily call, but anybody out in particular. In my mind, it was just, you know, story elements kind of hyping up the fact that the members of Schism called her often and were checking up on her, making sure she was okay. Which, you know, is a little strange that you've got three fully grown men calling a younger girl, making sure she's okay. But you know what? It's wrestling. I'm going to let it go. But it's a little weird at the same time. Just want to throw that out there.
Fully grown.
Well, yeah, I know, but still, it's, I don't know, still, it gives me weird vibes, but at the same time, I'm down for it. I really like what she's brought to the table so far.
Oh gosh. Out of context. It's really creepy, but I'm down for it.
Hey, go ahead. Take it out of context, man. Take it out of context. We'll throw it all over the internet. I don't necessarily think that, you know, she was singling anybody out. I just think it was to basically build up the bond that she's supposedly grown with Schism. Talking about Ava Raine, I think that she's onto something here. Hearing her talk tonight, yeah, she sounded a little rehearsed, but not so much. Like when you compare, especially when you compare her to the rest of the roster, and considering this is, I think, her first live promo. Well, it wasn't live. It was taped, but still her first actual promo, first time she's speaking to the camera. I thought she did a pretty damn good job. She's pretty believable. I'm sure she's had some, you know, coaching from her father in terms of acting, probably had some acting classes on her own. I don't have anything to back that up. That's just a hunch. I thought she handled herself here pretty well tonight. The entire Schism segment I thought was actually pretty cool. The inclusion of the masks is reminiscent of like the Wyatt family, but at the same time where everybody's wearing them, it is a little bit different, but I like it. It's kind of spooky, a little weird, a little ominous. I think it brings another layer to the to Schism, which they need some more. They need more. I'm a little bit higher on Schism, I know, than Bruce and Kelly. And even me, I'm kind of like, you know, Schism's okay, but they need something. And I'm hoping Ava Raine is what that could be. I forget who said it last week, if it was either you, Bruce, or if it was Kelly. But it's clear now that Schism is all about getting Ava Raine over. It was you. Okay. I thought it was, but I wasn't sure. But it's all about getting Ava Raine over. And I think that segment tonight proved that. It was pretty much focusing all on her. Granted, she is the new member, so it kind of makes sense to introduce her, but I think that is the path they're going on. So Bruce, on Ryan's question and on the Schism segment.
So I wrote that while you can see she was definitely forcing some of it out and doing her best to seem menacing and justified, I do think it's a good start. She could have been flat, especially as a first try. I'd say it was a success. She, you know, I said last week she didn't seem uncomfortable in her life. She seemed like she belonged there, and I felt like the same here. She seemed to have a confidence factor, even though she knows she's a bit green, and she knows she's still learning. I think what they did was put her in a protected setting in a pre-recorded interview and allowed her to work off of Vic Joseph's questions in her in character, which was also being worked off of the other three members of Schism. So by doing that, they really maximized the potential for her to do well, not just in her first promo, but to feel comfortable enough moving forward that she kind of has this embodiment of this character every time she's out there. And I think, you know, yes, like I said, she seemed a little forced, and she seemed like she did rehearse a couple things here and there, but she gave it with enough confidence and with enough conviction in her eyes, I think, that even though there's plenty of space to work with here, I think that you have to consider this first attempt a success. And, yeah, I don't see any other reason that this faction exists except to make sure that Ava Rain becomes a star. Now, you could argue, can anyone become a star when they're associated with Schism? But there is definitely you cannot argue against the fact that her presence immediately brings a certain, if not star factor, at least an element of that to the group that they didn't have before, strictly just based off who she is. Now, I know she wants to create a separate identity for herself, and good for her. I don't know if you saw, but the WWE BT Sport Twitter account tweeted out a picture of that segment and tagged The Rock and asked what he would think about this. And she just replied with one word to them, irrelevant, because for her, that all that success, all that fortune, and all that fame, as she said tonight, bring her anything for the people that knew her for years. But to Ryan's question, I do think it was purely storyline driven. I think a lot of these are really just storyline driven, and because it can touch on reality enough, because we've had moments like that or we've been those people, I think that it's believable to a certain extent for a lot of fans. So, to Ryan's question specifically, I think it's purely storyline, but overall, I think you have to consider what they've done with her thus far as success, contextually speaking, if you see them associating her with them as a positive move.
I love that. She just responded irrelevant. I mean, that's because it's very clear that she wants to be completely separate from her father. That's really what the segment was tonight. You know, and they never once, I don't think once they've mentioned that she is The Rock's daughter. You know, I feel like that's the right move, you know, especially if they want to, you know, differentiate her from that. But, you know, she's, sorry, go ahead.
No, finish off and I'll add after that.
But the fact that she's also making subtle nods, so it's kind of like, if you know, you know, and she's making subtle nods to, you know, kind of her past and who she is and whatnot, and kind of, you know, saying that she wants to, you know, make her own way. I'm really on board with that. I think you're right. This was an absolute success. You know, like we both said, it was a little rehearsed and somewhat forced at times, but considering this was her very first vignette, very first interview, I think she knocked it out of the park, especially compared to some of the interviews that we've seen on NXT, and that's from people that have been in NXT for years sometimes. So I definitely think it's overall been a success. Go ahead and with your follow-up, then we'll go back to Ryan.
So I will say, listening to Kelly and Tom on 8YB 8 years back, VIP exclusive. They are right now talking about Charlotte Flair and kind of her journey and how they really tried at first to separate her from her father's legacy, but that they realized at a certain point they had to not just recognize it, but somehow make that a part of her character. And then they kind of discussed how in the years since she's really made that legacy her own, to the point that even her father says that she's better than him. But I do think that if it comes to a point where, and they haven't made it like that right now, I think, you know, it's early on, 2 weeks, but I don't really feel like the fans are pining as much as these outlets are for for association with her father to come to light or to at least be acknowledged on TV. But if that does happen and they come to that point, I do think that the Charlotte Flair example that they had under Triple H's tutelage about 8 years ago, according to the podcast, is a good example for them to follow if it does come to that.
100%. I think there's a lot of comparisons that are going to be drawn between her and Charlotte. And I'm kind of hoping that they draw us different, or they kind of go on different paths, because I feel like with Eva Rain, she is, it's not quite as clear that she is The Rock's daughter. Again, if you know, you know, but if you're just watching the show, you know. Whereas I feel like with Charlotte Flair, I guess it was probably the same with Charlotte Flair. If, you know, because it's not like they called her Charlotte Flair. They just called her Charlotte. I don't know. But I feel like it is different. Charlotte kind of, it almost felt like you just, her natural, the natural progression she was on at that point, it just kind of felt like they had to tap into that, you know, from what I remember, you know, watching NXT back then. Because that was when I started really getting into NXT, was the Charlotte and Natalya match where they had Brett and Ric Flair in their respective corners there. But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of comparisons drawn between her and Charlotte, and I think, you know, rightfully so. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what she can do in the ring, and I'm really looking forward to what she does going forward here, because hopefully if her father's any indication of what she can potentially do in the company, I'm hoping if she is like one half as entertaining as her father, she's going to be a top star in this business.
Oh, so. If her mother's any indication, she's going to do well.
Absolutely. Good point. You know, between both of her, hell, maybe she's going to be, you know, more entertaining than both of them put together.
And successful.
100%. You know, I have more power to her. I'm looking forward to seeing what she does. Ryan, back to you.
Heavy question on the R-Truth match on the Wild Dive. Looks like it may have went wrong. You think R-Truth is talented enough to pull that off that he could trick the audience into thinking he was hurt?
No.
That awkward landing? And has that ever happened before where they've stopped the match, where say like an older wrestler did a dive out of the ring and they couldn't continue?
No, that wasn't worked, unfortunately. I'm almost 100% sure. It seemed, I mean, the entire commercial break was in split screen. Bruce, I don't think you've seen it then. So the entire match in split screen was basically just Grayson Waller walking around the ring, biding for time. They didn't, as far as I remember, because like I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary at first. And then halfway through the break, because I was a little bit behind on the episodes, so I was actually fast forwarding through the break, and I noticed, I'm like, they're not showing R-Truth. It's just Waller walking around. And then no sooner do they come back from the break, they end the match. I don't remember seeing an X get thrown by the ref, but I'm sure that probably happened. I just don't remember seeing it. But the way that R-Truth was walking, you know, Bruce mentioned it on Skype or on our Twitter chat rather earlier tonight. That, you know, he's seen it many times with, you know, a basketball injury, torn ligament, or something like that. It kind of reminded me of Tegan Knox when she was walking away after, you know, tearing her ACL. The way that she was limping away, it kind of also reminded me of, like, you know, Triple H and, you know, getting. You know, limping away after tearing his quad. I don't think that was a worked spot. Unfortunately, it looked like, you know, he did get hurt. When he went over the top rope, you could see his leg kind of catch on the rope, and basically that would have completely screwed up his momentum, and he either would have over or under rotated. That probably over rotated. That's kind of what looks like, you know, he landed wrong, and that's caused the injury. I really hope it's nothing too serious. Hope it's not, you know, an actual tear and need surgery for, and he's going to be out for a long time. Yeah, he is getting up there. I looked it up actually before we went on air. He is 50 years old at this point. Doesn't look a day over 35, but he is 50 years old. So it's like, I'm hoping if it is something, you know, that he does need surgery for, he's able to bounce back. Because, man, R-Truth can do no wrong in my book. He is he's like one of my favorite things about WWE, and I'm not even kidding. Bruce, go ahead and talk about that in the R-Truth Grayson Waller match.
I haven't checked anything online, so I can't. So what I'm saying is based off just what I've seen and my experience, but that has not worked. And The injury actually happened before he hit the rope. It happened on the jump. The reason he lost his verticality is because when he went to jump, the pressure from hitting the mat and getting ready to explode out is what caused the ligament tear. It happens in basketball a lot. As someone who's watched basketball his entire life, you've seen that injury happen a lot. I mean, think about Derrick Rose against my Sixers in 2011 playoffs when he went up and his knee just gave out right then and there. That's what it basically was. I noted on my report immediately that when he hit the ground, he grabbed his knee before they went to commercial break. So I noticed that and made note of it in my report. And when they came back, I actually wasn't surprised to see that they called the match off, because immediately, to me, I thought that there was something legitimately wrong with his leg. And I think the only reason they waited until after the commercial break to give the signal is because they wanted the viewers at home to know what happened and have Vic Joseph there to tell you as it's happening. So Alicia Taylor said due to referee stoppage, I just said by injury. So that's what happened there. And again, from my experience is seeing it happen, knowing people it's happened to, that is a torn ACL right there. There's a possibility it could be on one of the lateral or the medial collateral ligament, but I'm fairly certain he tore his ACL there. And the way that they had to assist him walking out like that, I'm fairly certain that what happened is, I've seen people walk out with ACL tears. I had a friend in college who was basically still playing basketball on a torn ACL for a good 6 months, just using a kind of a knee brace to keep things there because he couldn't afford surgery. So you can do things, but it's not, it definitely needs to be repaired. And from what I saw, that was not worked. The torn ACL. I wouldn't be surprised if the torn ACL. I'm hoping it's not. I'm really hoping it's not. But from what I saw, it's got to be a long time for R-Truth to come back to any sort of form.
Yeah, unfortunately. So yeah, and it's funny because even before you said on our in the Twitter chat that you thought it was a torn ligament, like when I saw him limping with the help of the two referees, the first thing that went through my head was Tegan Knox and a torn ACL. So man, I don't know. Fingers crossed, it's not too bad, but doesn't look good. Definitely doesn't look good. But what did you think of the Grayson Waller and R-Truth match itself?
I don't really think there was enough time to get into before the commercial and what happened to give an account. And I really do think that the injury kind of colored my opinion of the entire match. I honestly can't even remember what happened in most of the match, even looking through my report right now. It's just, I just see Truth on the ground clutching his knee.
Yeah, no, fair. I mean, the match, like, it was essentially just a traditional R-Truth match, which was really just a traditional John Cena match. A lot of headlocks, shoulder blocks.
I remember Waller with the "You Can't See Me" taunt.
Yeah, right. You know, but so I really enjoyed what they were doing. I was really kind of totally into it, and yeah, the injury there really zapped the energy out of the room. I thought Grayson Waller did a great job recovering. As much as I hate to see anybody get injured, especially my man R-Truth, I think the fact that he was able to go out there and be like, yeah, I just beat R-Truth. You just saw it. I did it. And he's acting like he beat R-Truth clean. All that does is plays into his character, kind of gives him a little bit, a little extra rub, I think. I think it would have been nicer to see him get, pinned, pin R-Truth clean and kind of be able to use that to run his mouth. But, it still works out. He's still able to get a little bit of a rub from it. I'd say he beat R-Truth, put him out of action, whatever. He kind of used it as a storytelling mechanism for himself. But yeah, R-Truth, man, hope it's nothing serious. We see you back in the ring pretty soon.
And that impromptu promo ability from Waller is going to serve him well as he moves on. It's just
100%.
Another reason why so many people are high on him because of that ability.
Yeah, I mean, he picked the mic up and just started talking. Whether he started talking about, like, whether that the majority of that promo was supposed to happen or not, because I'm assuming he was going to win. So whether or not that, I'm kind of assuming that promo was supposed to happen to some extent, but there was definitely, you know, some off the cuff, ad-libbing that he needed to do there, you know, because of the situation. And I agree. I think that ability is really going to take him far in this business. I think he's, as far as talkers in NXT, he's probably in the top five without really thinking too hard about it. He's probably in the top five. Ryan, back to you.
I have a question on the Indy Hartwell Zoe Stark match. The lights flickering and the announcers making a comment about it. You think Bray Wyatt is maybe recruiting one of them for his stable? Or is there some sort of gothic character that seemed to show up in NXT shortly?
Well, so that was the third time that I had actually noticed that throughout the course of the night. There was one that happened during two other entrances. One was Wesley, and I forget what the other one was off the top of my head. I have it written down in my notes.
I thought
notes
it was somewhere. Grayson Waller's entrance. Maybe I was wrong.
I said Wesley. I meant Grayson Waller. In my head, I even pictured Grayson Waller as I said Wesley. It was during one was during Grayson Waller's entrance. Then it was during somebody else's entrance.
Mandy Rose,
Toxic Attraction. Thank you. And then again here at the start of this match, I said something in our Twitter chat, actually, and I was kind of like, either there's somebody that keeps screwing up on production tonight, you know, hitting the wrong button, or, there's something going on here. And Tom writes back, and he's just like, scripts, man. And I'm like, oh, yeah, scripts. We get some sort of a hacker in the midst. So that's kind of what I think it is.
Is it Solomon Crowe? I'm joking.
Oh, God, Solomon Crowe. You know, I'm not going to lie. I thought that character had some potential during its debut, and then it went downhill very, very quickly. I was really excited for, like, a hacker gimmick, like, you know, being an IT guy. But so is my buddy. He's also an IT guy, and we were watching NXT together a lot, and we were both excited for it, and then the gimmick sucked. But anyway, that's what I think it is. It scripts, and I got to give Tom credit for that one because I didn't think of that on my own. Bruce, scripts?
Yeah, at first we were discussing if this is the return of Dijakovic, Dom Dijak, however you want to say it. But then the vignette later was pretty obviously for his return, and he's gunning for Braun Breaker's title. So whoever this is, I hope that far with the returns and the vignettes and the re-debuts in NXT since Triple H took over and Shawn Michaels firmly took control of NXT, they've done pretty well. So I'm going to give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here as it comes to this debut, because I haven't checked any of the sheets. I haven't looked. I haven't searched to see who this might be. I'm interested. I don't know if I want to have it spoiled. I probably wouldn't care much, but I also don't want to. I think this one I want to really find out who it is on my own and see the debut. But I just, it's interesting how they're doing it because, as you said, how is Scripps getting control of all the production and everything and able to do that and hack it all that? So how are they going to bring that gimmick? I think the failure with Solomon Crowe is one. They failed to really make anything after his debut cool in regards to his gimmick. And then I think the other failure was that in-ring, they just didn't really translate the gimmick well. And that's kind of what we've been saying about The Fiend when he made his debut, and hopefully with Bray Wyatt, it becomes more better. But I think not knowing anything or who it could be, I'm excited to see what they do, but hopefully they don't go down the road of the first go-run with The Fiend.
You know that feeling in the back of your nose that you're about to sneeze and it just won't come out? That's where I'm at right now. I'm kind of there with you. It is a kind of reminiscent of The Fiend and some of that stuff. I'm curious to see who this is. Like, I've done a little bit of digging online to see if, you know, anybody's talking about who it might
be.
It's Dante Chen. It's got to be Dante Chen. yep, there we go. We solved the mystery. Nobody really, you know, there's a few guesses out there, but nothing seems to be super definitive about who Scripps is. At first, I thought it was, you know, kind of Dijak as well. But after that vignette, later on, I think it was maybe – 15-20 minutes later, from this particular vignette, strips vignette, there was one for Dijak, and you know, clearly for Dijak, and it's not going to be him. I don't think they would have two vignettes that are sort of similar but a little different with two different voices. I think they're hyping two different people. Ryan, do you have anything else? Shall we move on?
My last question is on Booker T. I don't know if he caught this, but he's pretty much saying his wrestling federation was for sale. Is that true, or do you think he was just making a colorful joke commentary?
I actually did not notice him say that. Did you hear him say that at all?
Yeah, I think he was joking. I think it was in response to Joseph saying something about something to do with money or rich people or something, and Booker T just being like, oh, it's for sale. I think it's more like anything's for sale at the right price, right? So,
okay, that sounds like something Booker would say. So, I'd say that, because, like, I mean, I have no idea if he's got it up for sale or not, but I don't remember hearing that particular line. I kind of tend to phase Booker out, like, and I thought I was doing it on purpose at first, but, like, he has the tone of his voice, I've got a little bit of hearing loss, and the tone of his voice, I can't hear it as well as I can hear everybody else. So I hear Vic Joseph a lot. It almost sounds like he's talking to himself half the time. I got to turn it up a little bit, and then I can finally hear Booker. So I definitely didn't hear him say that tonight. From what Bruce is describing, that's what would make sense to me, is it's just like, you know, he's saying, like, essentially what the $1 million man would say, everybody's got a price. So that's probably all that was there. Anything else, Ryan? Any follow-up on that, or?
It was during the James trying to buy Chase Hughes when he said that remark, I believe.
Okay. So, yeah, that would make sense. That would definitely make sense. It's kind of the context then. I would say it was probably just him saying, yeah, I'd sell that for the right price.
All right. Thanks for taking my call tonight.
All right. As always, Ryan, thank you very much. Talk to you next time. All right. So with that, let's go into why not? Let's talk about 1 year of Mandy Rose as our NXT Women's Champion. So we've been hearing about this. I want to say it's about all week now. They've been kind of hyping up her as the they're hyping up her 1 year anniversary from winning the NXT Women's Championship. I know they've been talking about it. They talked about it on Raw. I'm pretty sure they even brought it up on SmackDown. They talked about it last week in NXT. So it's definitely been promoted. I've seen it on Twitter. I've seen it on WWE's website even before today. So it's definitely been heavily promoted that she's, you know, been a champion for a year. Toxic Attraction began the segment. There were three of them coming to the ring. Gigi Dolin and JC Jane had a video package set up for her, which I think was mostly shots from the video packages they've shown already, but I could be wrong. And for the most part, they just showed her in a lot of glamour shots, photo shoots. There were, you know, a few shots of her, hitting the high knee on her opponents, or, you know, doing some sort of a dastardly move outside the ring. Like, I remember there was one where she was standing outside the ring and her opponent was lying in the ring with the turnbuckle between their legs, and, you know, basically just smashed her leg off the turnbuckle. But essentially didn't show a whole lot of her wrestling. It showed mostly just her being eye candy. But the whole premise of it was her talking about how everybody thought that she was just eye candy and couldn't actually, you know, hold a title, especially as prestigious as the NXT Women's Championship, for any length of time. Essentially how she proved us all wrong, because I know we were ones that didn't think she'd get to a full year as champion. So Bruce, what do you think about the segment? I forgot about how the segment finished up. Alba Fire, it was right as Mandy Rose was saying how nobody was going to end up taking her title. Smoke kind of came billowing out of the ring, and Alba Fire attacked all the members of Toxic Attraction, essentially kind of setting up a rematch for the NXT Women's title. If I was a betting man, I would say that's where we're headed, the rematch for the NXT Women's title between Alba Fire and Mandy Rose. So, Bruce, what did you think of the segment as a whole, and how do you feel Mandy Rose has done 1 year in as an NXT Women's Champion?
Well, if you were a betting man, you wouldn't get any odds on that, because Alba Fire pretty clearly stated that she took out Gigi Dolan tonight. She's taking out JC Jane next week, and then she's taking on Mandy Rose in 2 weeks. So, yeah, she's definitely getting Mandy Rose in 2 weeks, Nate. But no one will take you on your bet.
I barely remember what I did today, let alone what happened in that segment. But that's exactly what happened. She said she was going to take Dolan out first, as she did tonight, Jane out second, and take the title third week. So, yeah, that's right. I shouldn't be a betting man, because they literally spelled out what was going to happen.
So I'll say that from my perspective, it seemed like the beginning of the video for Mandy Rose's one-year celebration focused more on her and her bikini shots, and then the second half focused more on her hitting her knee, kissed by the rose, to retain her title in all of those title defenses that she had. So, to me, the video was fun, as you'd expect from a WWE video at this point. When is one not done well, unless it's trying to intentionally be bad, like those MSK Shaman ones? But for me, I wrote that Mandy Rose, since she's returned to NXT, there hasn't been an issue with her on the promos, and that was the same thing tonight. She did well in her short amount of time. I do think, like with the R-Truth injury, the ending to this segment kind of soured me a bit, because she was still speaking when the smoke started shooting up on the ring, and she had to finish off her line. And as she was finishing off her line, that's when Alba Fire was attacked them. So I think the execution at the end here was a bit poor. But overall, I think Mandy Rose stood there confidently. She blamed the fans. But the thing was, the things she said about the fans were justified, because those are the things that were being said about her. And in her mind, she's proven them all wrong by having this long reign. And in her defense, very few of her title matches have had distraction finishes or DQ finishes. She's pretty much retained clean in most every single one of her title matches, at least the past few months. Harlan Havoc being a weird anomaly, but, you know, she pinned Zoe Stark clean. She pinned Roxanne Perez clean. I think she pinned Kaylee Ray at the time clean back in the day. So it's she's done a lot. They've done a lot in booking her how you'd want champions to be built. But I think a lot of the preconceptions about her have diluted a lot of what she's accomplished, and also her matches haven't been the greatest, so regardless of how she's won, the quality of her matches have soured some on the reign as well. But in her mind, she's justified, not just because of her reign, but because of how she's won. So I'll give them credit for that. She's really doing well there. I don't think Alba Fire is going to be the one to dethrone her, but at this point, unless you shoot Roxanne Perez up and she's not ready for that, do you bring Mako Satomura back? I really don't know. So let's see. Satomura would at least have a legit justification for getting a one-on-one match, because she didn't get that to begin with. But really, I don't know what they would do.
Yeah, I don't know. There's part of me that does want to see – I keep wanting to call her Kaylee Ray – that wants to see Alba Fire – dethrone Mandy Rose, and it's like, out of anybody on the roster right now, she's the only one that really stands out to me as somebody that could do it. You know, I mean, from a kayfabe perspective, I guess you've got Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark, but Zoe Stark to me a little bit more believable than Lyons, at least this point in time. It's like, I don't really know who else you'd go to. Whereas with there aren't many new fresh matchups for Mandy Rose. Whereas Kaylee Ray, Alba Fire, every match would be a fresh match, for her, for the most part. With the exception of a match between her, a rematch between her and Mandy Rose, or you know, even even her and Toxic Attraction. You know, for the most part, everything else would be fresh. And I feel like it's well deserved. I mean, she was, you know, a long reigning NXT UK Women's Champion. Granted, most of that was during the pandemic when they weren't operating, but still, it happened. And you know, they're promoting it as her being a long dominant champion. So I'm gonna go with that in my analysis anyway. I think it would be well deserved, and kind of go from there. And then you know, potentially see Toxic Attraction get called up, as we often talk about. So yeah, we'll kind of see where this all pans out. I thought it was a you know halfway decent segment. You know, like you said, it was that where she did Mandy did keep talking after the smoke. I thought that was a little just weird. I know if like I'm in the middle of talking and something distracts me, I stop dead in my tracks. I wouldn't continue talking, or you'd at least you know hear my voice waver or something like that. So that was just a little weird, but overall, I think, you know, the segment was fine. And I echo most of what you said about her reign so far. Yeah. I think, you know, in terms of her character work and promo ability, she's been completely passable and even on the better end, fine. It's the in-ring stuff that's, you know, kind of been her downfall. However, I feel like she's gotten a lot better over the course of the year, being down in NXT, being in developmental. You know, she's still not the greatest women's wrestler of all time. But I think she's passable and at this point somewhat believable as champion. So I'm on board. And I am kind of looking forward to seeing her lose the title though. I do feel like it's, even though it's been kind of, you know, I don't want to say it's been a strong reign, but a pretty well booked reign, and entertaining reign at times. Yeah, I do feel like it's, Both her and Bron Breakker's reigns are kind of getting a bit stale, and I think need to end sooner rather than later. So yeah, that's kind of what we got on Mandy Rose is Mandy Rose's 1 year celebration. So let's go and we did talk about Truth and Waller. So let's talk about Keanu James and Thea Hale. So we had Keanu James earlier in the night. We had Keanu, actually it was right before this match. It wasn't too earlier in the night. Right before this match, Keanu James was talking with her assistant. And have we gotten a name for her assistant?
Nope.
I know we. Okay, I didn't think so. I know we brought it up before, but I didn't think we'd actually got it. I wasn't sure if we got it at this point. But was talking to her assistant backstage, handed her an envelope as Keanu James walked out to this, you know, for her match here against Thea Hale. We did see a little bit later after this match that envelope get delivered to Fallon Henley, who read the contents of said envelope, looked a little surprised, and told her two idiots to read them. And by two idiots, I don't mean Kelly and Tom. I meant Brooks and Jensen.
Brooks and Jensen.
I'm going to do that till the end of time. Me and Kelly are going to do it at the end of time. Briggs and Jensen. To read the contents of the envelope, and they were both kind of, they were all kind of shocked, but they didn't reveal what it said. Then we had the match between Thea Hale and even before this as well, we also had another segment with Thea Hale and Andre Chase backstage getting pumped for the matchup. However, they kind of looked to their left in this empty space right next to the flag that was sitting there in its flagpole, the Chase U flag, wondering who was going to carry the flag. A bit of a subtle nod to the fact that Bodie Hayward was released earlier in the week and is no longer obviously able to carry the flag to the ring. Duke Hudson just kind of like broke through a wall, which was really just a piece of paper kind of hung up. Really wasn't a wall, but you know, whatever. It looked kind of cool. It was a good visual. Busted through this thing like you they would as you know, sports teams would on the field. Grabbed the flag, said he'd do it, and like excitedly hype man down to the ring. During the match itself, we did see Duke Hudson get involved when Thea Hale was getting pinned. Duke Hudson grabbed her foot, put it on the rope. The ref did see it. He broke up the pin. The ref saw it. So did Andre Chase. He scolded Duke Hudson and basically sent him backstage. Obviously, in wrestling, if anything is happening outside the ring, it's distracting and you forget how to wrestle. And that's what happened to Thea Hale. And she lost the match to Kiana James shortly thereafter. Then right after that, right after the match, was it Von Wagner? Was it Von Wagner that attacked? Who was it that attacked? Why can't I remember who actually attacked now?
Are you getting the segment mixed up with another one? Let me check here. Kiana.
No, somebody attacked Andre Chase and.
It was Charlie Dempsey.
Charlie Dempsey, thank you. Charlie Dempsey attacked Chase University, both
Andre Chase
and, who knocked in the Thea Hale. They were both taken out, but Charlie Dempsey didn't actually lay hands on Thea Hale. They were both taken out. Duke Hudson, even though he was exiled from ringside, came back to make the save for Chase University. Making it look like, he kind of was trying to make a genuine effort to help out these guys. I don't know if it's a change of heart. I don't think so. I think he's up to something. Duke Hudson's a little bit too crafty for my liking. I really like Duke Hudson. I'm just playing into the story here. I'm curious to see kind of what happens because Bodie Hayward was the one that was kind of like not super trusting of Duke Hudson, and I kind of had a feeling we were going to wind up seeing a bit of a feud between the two of them. Now with Bodie Hayward gone, I'm kind of wondering what's happening with Duke Hudson. Is he like legitimately trying to help out Chase University, which I doubt, or not. So we'll kind of see what happens there. But Bruce, what did you think of this segment and where we're going with Duke Hudson?
Poor Thea Hale. Well, one, you're not giving her enough credit. She took a finisher before the distraction and then had to eat another finisher from Kiana James. So it wasn't just that Hudson put her foot on the rope and then that was after she took the first finisher. So the match could have ended right there, but because of Hudson doing that, Hale ended up taking a second finisher just because. So, that kind of sucks for Hale. It helps put Kiana James's finisher over, I guess. Her it's called 401k. It's basically a reverse single blade flatliner, and good for her, I guess, because it does look cool, and it is the best thing she does in the ring. And the Phillies just won Game 3 of the World Series and are up 2-1 on Houston. So, I think that what this match was really a way to build two different angles that didn't involve these two together. So the first part is, yes, they had a match before, but Thea Hale probably just doesn't see, Kiana James probably doesn't see Thea Hale as legitimate competition because she beat her with one move last time. And while Thea Hale made it a lot longer this time, she also lost and would have lost clean. And then lost clean again anyway. So basically lost clean twice in the ring tonight to Kiana James, who they're building for something, but that's obviously with Fallon Henley because of her assistant giving the stack of maybe she's being served, I don't know, some kind of a lawsuit, whatever. That's what's building with Kiana James here, and it's with Fallon Henley. And then with Thea Hale and Chase Yu, it's this continued storyline that I forgot Charlie Dempsey had issues with Andre Chase because he's been off TV for a while, and I don't know why that was, but him coming back, he reminded me that, oh, yeah, he did have issues with Andre Chase before, and the announcers were there to remind you of that as well. After Dempsey attacked and Hudson made the save, you noticed that Hale was hesitant to take Duke's hand as he offered it to help her up after clearing the ring of Dempsey. And then as he was helping or having Andre Chase kind of lean on him for support, he kind of wiggled his eyebrows at Thea Hale a couple times. I don't know what that's about, but it seems like since the beginning, what they've been doing is building Hudson up as this weasel who's really not there for any sort of altruistic reason and maybe will lead to the downfall of Chase Yu. I don't know what his issue is with Chase Yu. I'm hoping that'll come out if and when he does turn against them. But that's what it seems like we're heading toward here with them. And I wonder how it's going to play in with Charlie Dempsey. Maybe he hired Dempsey to make the attack. Who knows? But, all I'm saying is there's more work to be done with Hudson here. But I like the dynamic that they're introducing with him as a replacement for Bodie Hayward. And from what I saw, Brian Alvarez reported that Bodie Hayward was kind of a pain in the ass to work with. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, I saw him report that, and then I saw a couple other places pick that. Well, you sent that to us earlier, and then I saw a couple other places pick that up. And I did. It was during the course of the show, so I haven't actually watched it yet, but I saw Bodie Hayward tweet out something, some sort of a video, and apparently says in there that he's embarrassed. And I'm not sure if he says what he's embarrassed about. I want to watch it at some point.
He has a lot of things to be embarrassed about.
Yeah, that's true. But he said he's hurt and embarrassed, and you know, but it, you know, all accounts, it does kind of seem like, you know, he might have been kind of a pain to deal with, you know, which is, it's a shame. I was enjoying what he was doing on TV, I'll be honest. But you know, given the whole Chase U gimmick and everything, I thought it was kind of, you know, it fit. So, yeah, kind of a shame, but oh well. He did it to himself, it sounds like. So, anyway, let's go on
to... Yeah, they did it right in the middle of the storyline. There's no reason for that to happen unless, yeah.
Oh, yeah, unless he did it to himself, exactly.
Same thing happened with Dimes, Channing Lorenzo, or...
yeah, exactly.
Troy Donovan, I should say.
Yep. So I'm going to go to an email, because I probably should have done this while we were talking about Mandy Rose. Going to go to an email from Brian Alston, 31-year Senior Torch VIP subscriber. Brian says, hello, friends. Since I'm on the West Coast, I cannot interact with you live. However, I am reviewing Doc Bruce's live report. I personally want to congratulate Mandy Rose. She has single-handedly defended the NXT Women's Championship without any help or interference. Mandy is the type of champion the little girls can look up to, and she sets the template in which wrestlers in the locker room can model their careers. Hopefully, no one will interrupt the Toxic Attraction ceremony. question. He obviously sent this in before that. Actually, I think the email hit right after the segment. But regardless, question: which NXT singles title has been booked the best? And you can place them in your favorite order: 1, 2, and 3. Men's, women's, and North Americans. Personally, one of my favorite spots in 2017 during Ember Moon's feud with Asuka. Ember chased Asuka out of the ring. Asuka left the belt. Ember was about to pick it up and then hesitated. She didn't want to touch the title until she actually won it, which was a great moment. And don't forget to listen to Saturday's Torch VIP exclusive podcast, NXT 8 Years Back, where Kelly and Tom Stope review the November 6, 2014 edition of NXT. This episode features an all-horsewomen tag team plus the debut of a major wrestler who's still on the roster. Tom and Kelly also discuss movie trivia. And this week, they'll review the career of the director of The Vampire in Brooklyn from 1995. Thanks, Brian L. Alston. Thank you, as always, Brian. So, which NXT title has been booked the best? I don't know if he means, like, this year or all time or what. But if we're going from all time, I would say it's going to be, for me, the women's title. And then kind of a toss between the North American and men's, but I'd say probably men's and then North American. But the North American title, I think, has been booked strong, just not as strong as the other two. So I think it's going to be women's, men's, North American for me. Bruce, what about you?
That NXT Men's Championship has seen some...
It's seen some weird stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that Karrion Kross reign was really not great.
I did forget about that.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Finn's first run. I know Tom and I agree there, too. Mandy Rose's reign is still the women's title. And as Brian said, what I pointed out before, she's pretty much defended her title clean in all of her matches and won with her finisher. And so that is how you generally build up strong champions. And I guess it's just the perception of her that hasn't, you know, translated, even though she has had a reign like that. I really just have to think that it's the perception, and also some of, like you said, some of her matches haven't been the greatest. You know, I still think of that Dakota Kai match, which was really, really bad. And even the match with Alba Fyre at Halloween Havoc, it's just maybe the cinematic match left a different taste in the mouth, but the actual match they had didn't seem to be.
It didn't seem to click.
So it seems like Mandy Rose, it's hit or miss with her chemistry with certain wrestlers. And I think that has a bit to do with that perception of her title. And even though, again, she's won with her knee, literally every single match, I feel like I've seen her win with that clean in the middle of the ring, or the one that she hit. I guess you could say that the one she hit on Zoe Stark with the knee brace wasn't clean. And then she did hit the one on Blair Davenport that knocked out Mako Satomura in the triple threat match. But yeah, she's basically won with that knee clean in the middle of the ring for every title defense since she's won, or at least since she made that her bona fide finisher. So when we talk about there's another match I'll get to and we'll talk about finishers, but yeah, I'll leave it at that.
All right. Sounds good to me. We could go on to some other stuff, but we got two more emails. One of them just actually came in as we were talking. So let's just keep going to emails, shall we? This one's from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I just wanted to know what you thought of the releases today. Bodhi was the only name I recognized, but I feel sad for them all. What do you think this round of releases signals for NXT going forward? Thanks as always, go VIP, and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. So, I saw something yesterday that said that there were going to be some names released today. We did get, the only real name of note was Bodhi Hayward. We've got a couple of Bodhi. So basically, we have Bodhi Hayward, Sloan Jacobs, Erica Young, Damaris Griffin, and Ru Fang. Now, we've seen Ru Fang, Sloan Jacobs, and Bodhi Hayward on TV. I'm not sure, actually, according to this article I pulled up at random, Erica Young was on the September 9th edition of Level Up, and Damaris Griffin has worked a few Level Up matches as well. The last one was on August 5th. But Ru Fang, he's been on NXT before. I think his last appearance was also Level Up. He was in something with Dante Chen, if memory serves. Sloane Jacobs, she's been in a few NXT shows as well, most recently on Level Up on October 7th. And then obviously we know who Bodhi Hayward is and all that. So, as far as the releases, like Bodhi Hayward, from what it sounds like, you know, he probably did it to himself. Obviously just hearsay what's being reported so far, but that kind of seems like that might be what it is with him. And the rest of them, I mean, you know, they probably weren't people that were performing up to, you know, up to par, or whatever. You know, I don't really have any idea of why they were, you know, those other four were released, but, if I had to guess, I mean, you can't always keep everybody. You got to cut some people if, they're not performing up to the standard that's set. So that would be my guess. But unfortunately, I don't really have any more, any more at the moment, as to what happened with, at least those other four, Bodhi Hayward notwithstanding. Bruce, do you have any idea, any follow-up or any thought?
I mean, I haven't looked into it. My only guess is that, Sloane Jacobs, when she was on TV, didn't impress me too much with her work. Erica Kiana hadn't really seen too much and whatnot. So in my guess is that they just didn't see enough improvement to warrant the investment they were making in them. Meager as the investment was, I think they felt like maybe the space and time for the performance center and the coaching could be better spent on people they might have seen more potential in. At least the growth over the months and stuff, because they've been there for a bit. It's not like they just got there, but yeah, I would have to put it at they just weren't progressing.
Oh man, JB, I'm not sure about this email, but I'm going to read it anyway. JB writes, "Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. Who's been the crankier old man on WWE TV recently, JBL or Booker T? Also, which of them uses more outdated buzzwords for generations younger than them? Love the show and go VIP." That's a good question. I think it's probably JBL because JBL is playing heel with Baron, being kind of the hype man for Baron Corbin. But he is, even if he's playing a face, he's still a heel. He's he's a jackass. But let me tell you what I really feel about JBL. I loved him as Bradshaw. And then as far as I'm concerned, Bradshaw died, and then JBL took his place. I would say JBL. JBL definitely is the crankier old man on TV. Booker T certainly, but he's obviously playing a face commentator right now. He's not in a heel role, so he's going to be a little bit more jovial and upbeat. I definitely think that's kind of a given there for JBL to be a bit more cranky. As far as the buzzwords and stuff, I'm going to say it's both of them. I forget, there was something that Booker said tonight, and I can't remember what it was, but I remember thinking to myself, like, has anybody said that this century? I don't remember what it was. I wish I wrote it down. I definitely think they're probably equals in using bad buzzwords and outdated buzzwords. Bruce.
Yeah, it's JBL, but they both suck.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, like I said, I have trouble hearing Booker T on commentary, but I don't hate him on commentary as much as I thought I was going to, but I still don't want him on commentary, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
He's there, I'll deal with him, he's not doing as bad of a job as I expected. He's doing more or less exactly the job I expected, maybe a little bit better. But I don't know. He certainly brings the star power to the show. I've got a lot of respect for the body of work from Booker T. In his in-ring days and whatnot. But on commentary, I feel like there are definitely better people in the company, or probably better people looking for a job right now that can handle it.
There's Nigel.
Yeah, well, Nigel got cut. Nigel got released.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. You know, and which I think is an absolute travesty. I mean, maybe Nigel wanted to go. I mean, I have no idea. But man, Nigel was awesome. Absolutely awesome on commentary. All right, cool. So that's JB's email. Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. So that was all three emails. That's awesome. We hit them all. Beautiful. So let's go ahead and talk about Javier Bernal and Odyssey
Big
Jones.
Hobby.
Yes. So we saw before the Odyssey Jones and Bernal match, and we knew Odyssey Jones was going to have a match tonight, kind of re-debuting after his injury that took him out for the last, like, almost a year. I want to say it was almost a year at this point. 10 months?
10 months on commentary.
10 months? Okay, cool. So, hey, I was right. Almost a year. About 10 months or so. He was obviously going to have a match tonight, but there was no opponent named. So we ended up seeing a segment where Malik Blade and Idris Enofe were backstage in front of HBK's office, and kind of looking to try and seemingly get a rematch for the tag titles after kind of squandering that opportunity at Halloween Havoc. You're not able to capture the titles at Halloween Havoc, I guess I should say. Javier Bernal walked up and kind of, did some trash talking to him a little bit, basically saying that there's no use asking HBK for a rematch. All they need to do to get better is to just watch his match. And as a matter of fact, he texted HBK asking for a match tonight. Pretty much no sooner does he say that, HBK's door opens up and out walks Odyssey Jones. Odyssey Jones confirms right then and there that he's the opponent for Bernal later on in the night. We saw a few other things happen, but then the match happened. And by a few other things, I mean other segments happened, and then the match happened. We ended up seeing Odyssey Jones get the win here. I thought was a halfway decent match. I was just surprised at the amount of offense that Javier Bernal got in. Now I know that, you want to build some sympathy up on your baby face and make him build towards comeback and all that stuff. I understand that, but I feel like Odyssey Jones sold just a little bit too much for Javier Bernal tonight. I know it seems like they're trying to give Bernal a bit of a push. He's had a little bit more TV time and things like that over the past couple weeks. And obviously here a match tonight, So, I mean, it seems like maybe they're trying to give him a bit of a push. So maybe they wanted to have him get a little bit, you know, more offense in on Odyssey Jones than you know, like a normal type of a squash match or something like that. You know, Jones still got the win, but I thought it was kind of a – it wasn't a super dominant win. Wasn't a super dominant win in my eyes anyway. I would have thought that somebody like Odyssey Jones with his size and just his charisma – you know, he'd come in and essentially just kind of go Goldberg on people for a little while, you know, do some squash matches and then kind of build up. But NXT doesn't seem to be doing a whole heck of a lot of squash matches anymore either, now that I think about it. Overall, wasn't a bad match. Glad to see Odyssey Jones back. And I'm also curious to see what the future holds for Bernal. Like I said, I don't know if this is, you know, being a bit of a push for him or not. Seems like it is. I do seem to like what he does in the ring so far. He's certainly got some charisma with his current gimmick here. So, you know, certainly looking forward to see what kind of transpires with them in the future. Bruce, on Odyssey Jones and Bernal.
So you might be right, but I believe I heard Bernal say that he received a text from HBK to meet outside of the office, and not that he had texted HBK. But again, I could be wrong there. And then
it was something to do with the text message. Yeah.
Well, and then I'm also going to disagree with you on Jones selling too much here, because you missed the big point of the match then, which was not only did they put over that it's been 10 months since he's had his return from his last match because of a patella tendon injury, but you had Bernal attacking the knee to get all the offense in to make it believable.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, that was a story of the match they were telling. I was just kind of surprised that they told that story right away. I was kind of expecting that this was going to just be a straight up squash, and that they maybe, you know, might go to that, you know, the knee injury at some point in the future. But I kind of just expected, I don't know why, but I expected his first match back to just be much more dominant than it was.
Maybe they should have gone with a squash, but because you could tell that he's still finding the ring stamina, that's what I was looking for. The ring stamina for live matches in front of the TV and the cameras, which is a whole different set when it's just, you know, training at the PC or whatnot, or on a live show, a house show. So maybe they should have gone that way, but I think what they did here is fine, because you also don't expect someone who's coming off 10 months after a patella tendon injury to just be fine and dandy and think, oh yeah, I'm going to just go back and not have any hesitancy with my leg or not have it targeted by anybody or anything like that, especially in the sport that, or the entertainment form that this is. You know, you're expecting that to get targeted right away by any kind of heel, even if they're not the top level heel, I guess, in a way to put it. But Bernal also has enough hype, I think, to him to where it's not like, you know, Nathan Fraser was out there just trying to run into him and bump into him. He was actually putting some weight into his leg attacks. So I think they did fine there. Bernal's character is just, he's that obnoxious heel that's very arrogant and doesn't have the skills that he thinks he has, which is pretty funny, and works for his position because he's not going to win anything. I think we need to see at least another month or two of Odyssey Jones before we kind of get a determination of what his potential is going to be, because his knee injury happened at a very inopportune time for him. And I think we need to reassess what he can do now that he's back. And I think he slimmed down a little bit as well from my memory, but I could be wrong. But yeah,
he did look a little bit more svelte.
Okay. I do want to see how they move forward with the story, because it's clear the audience likes him.
He's got charisma for days, yeah.
Well, he got a really good pop too when his music hit and he came out.
Yeah.
So, and it almost seems like he might be the heavy to the No Fan Blade, and they might have a little three-person faction going, but maybe that was just
that would actually be pretty cool. I didn't think about that, but
maybe it's just because they were there to put over that they're trying to get a rematch. But I tend to think those things are more thought out than just randomly being placed there. So
Yeah, I didn't even really give that much thought, but you're usually right that, you know, some things like that are.
I'm usually right. You're right about that.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, you know, we're going to give you that, man. You know, you're usually right. Yeah, what's going on to me tonight? I'm being nice. I threw myself off. I completely lost my train of thought. What the hell were we just talking about?
We're talking about Jones and the Inofan blade.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even give that a thought about, you know, them potentially, you know, teaming up. I'd love to see that. I think, you know, with the charisma that Blade and I should have thought about that because, you know, he's the one that was driving the truck last week.
That's
true. Blade and Inofe jumped into. I think it'd be great. I mean, Malik Blade and Idris Inofe have been on fire, as we were talking about last week. And I think adding somebody with the charisma of Jones would be fantastic to that group, even if it was just like an association. Like, it wasn't like they were, you know, some sort of a stable or something, but they were just associated with one another. That would be pretty cool. I think that would make for some interesting, you know, kind of fun TV. I'm curious to see, you know, where Jones goes in the next few months too. You know, if this injury does kind of hinder him in the ring at all. I remember when he was around the first time not being, I don't want to say I wasn't super impressed with his in-ring work, because I know, you know, he was, I mean, super green. I think he was only wrestling for like, again, I'm just going off of memory here, but I want to say he was only wrestling for like 4 or 5 months before he had his first televised match. Could be wrong, but that sounds about right in my head. For however long it wasn't super long before he had his first televised match, let's put it that way. And I thought that it showed. I thought, you know, he still performed well and he had the crowd behind him and whatnot, but, you know, he was still a little green. I don't want to say like, you know, Mark Henry 96 green, but, you know, definitely a little green. I felt like he seemed a little bit more on his game tonight than from what I remember. But, you know, again, I kind of did see what you saw too, you know, favoring the knee a little bit and, you know, things like that. But yeah, overall, looking to see what happens with him. He's the charisma that Odyssey Jones has. I mean, people just automatically seem to like him. It's kind of infectious, the way that, you know, the crowd just pops for him. Hopefully he'll be doing good things down the line. All right, let's go into, let's see, hold on. I'm trying to see if we've,
I think there's one match left.
There's two matches left. I was just going through my notes real quick to see if there was a match or a backstage segment pertaining to a match we already talked about real quick. I guess we could actually talk. We didn't talk about this after the main event. The camera cut to Apollo Crews and JD McDonough looking over the the carnage after Von Wagner took out Bron Breakker. So we didn't talk about that to start the show. So I'm kind of curious to see, or not, sorry, not curious. I'm really interested in what's going on with the main event scene right now, because we've got Bron Breakker. We've got potentially even Wes Lee, even though they teamed up tonight. I mean, you know, they could obviously be setting up for some sort of a feud between the two of them. So you've got Wes Lee that could potentially be a challenger for Bron Breakker right now. I think it's a low chance, but I think the conversation exists. But you have Wes Lee, you've got Von Wagner, you've got Apollo Crews, you got JD McDonough. You might even have Ilya Dragunov still in the mix. We haven't seen him since Halloween Havoc. And there's Dante Chen. There's always Dante Chen. There's R-Truth, even if he's hopping on one leg.
Waller has a legitimate shot to give himself a title match of some sort.
Yep, and even though they haven't teased it since the NXT before Halloween Havoc, Austin Theory did show up, you know, with the Money in the Bank briefcase. And it doesn't seem like they're going to be doing anything with the Money in the Bank briefcase on, you know, main roster TV anytime soon. He's going into a match Crown Jewel with Seth Rollins. And nothing is being talked about with the briefcase. So I don't know. So that's still getting thrown out there too. Some Austin Theory. There's so many different threads right now for Bron Breakker to go, which is funny because just about a month ago, we weren't really sure where, actually even just a couple weeks ago, I remember talking about, you know, where is Bron Breakker going to go from here if he retains the title? And that even Ilya Dragunov and JD McDonough at the time, anyway, didn't seem like big enough names. They certainly won me over during their match at Halloween Havoc. And I think they, you know, as we talked about on that VIP roundtable, but, you know, they didn't, to me anyway, they didn't seem like big enough names to actually take the belt from Bron Breakker. And in the end, they didn't. Now all of a sudden we have all these other names involved in the main event picture. I don't know who's going to be the person to take the belt off of Breakker. I have a feeling it should happen soon. Well, it should happen sooner rather than later. I'm not sure if it will happen sooner rather than later, or if they're going to try and keep Bron Breakker as, dominant champion, maybe give him a reign quite as long as Roman Reigns. I don't know. Hopefully not. Yeah, what do you think about the post-match angle there and kind of what's going on with the main event?
So the thing with Breakker and not having anywhere to go, it was more about, do we see any of these people actually being the one to take the title off him more than who is he going to face next? So I still think that's the main question here. And the ending segment, McDonough went up to Cruz, and I thought they lingered on Cruz for a little too long before McDonough got there. But when he did get there, he said to Cruz, you know that vision you have of you being on top? Kind of hard to see when you have an eye gouged out. So McDonough playing into that sadistic side again, and apparently is going to have a feud with Apollo Crews. And hopefully we don't get a Rey Mysterio eye into the corner of the steps situation like we did during the pandemic. But
an eye for an eye match.
Yeah, exactly. It just seems... This is the second straight feud now where Cruz is going to have someone going after his eye or have an allusion to taking out his eye, right? Because with Grayson Waller, that happened too. What is it with him and his eye? I don't know. But, again, do I see McDonough or Cruz or Lee being the one to take the title off of him, off of Breakker? No, Carmelo Hayes should have gone after Breakker instead of Lee. It's like, you know what? That title is synonymous with my name. That title is me. I am still that title kind of thing, right? And then move on and say, I want to make the NXT champion the A championship like I did with the North American championship. So I don't really – again, the options present available for someone to take the title off of Bron Breakker just aren't that appealing, which leads me to believe he's going to hold on to it for a little longer. There was something else you brought up during that discussion that I'm now forgetting about.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect me to remember what I said 5 minutes ago.
I just feel like NXT champion again. I just don't. It's just I don't think about him when I think about NXT, except when I'm like, oh crap, I have to watch Bron Breakker kind of thing. And
yeah.
For your top champions, that's not what it should be. I do find it interesting that the main event had all three men's title holders, four men total, in the ring at one time with Pretty Deadly as a tag team champion and then Wesley and Bron Breakker. And I'm not sure if that's supposed to be a subtle hint to the viewers as, you know, these titles and therefore the title holders are important, so keep that in mind or whatnot. So yeah, I'm just regarding Bron Breakker as I am for other spots, and I wouldn't be surprised if he enters the Royal Rumble as NXT champion.
I was unmuted and then I muted myself. Mute button's going to be the bane of my existence. I'd like to see him in the Royal Rumble, but not as NXT champion. I don't know. It all depends on how Triple H wants to do things. Because I know, like, obviously with Vince wanted to try and keep NXT separate after trying to make things a third brand. Then they didn't want NXT kind of mingling, but then we've got NXT, coming up to the main roster under Triple H. you know, for some like one-off appearances. You know, Bron Breakker was one of them. We had Toxic Attraction, you know, Mandy Rose. I think there's a few others. Yeah, Stark and Lyons. You know, so I don't know. It all depends, I think, on how Triple H wants to do it. I could see Bron Breakker coming out as NXT champion during the Rumble, but I think if he is champion during the Rumble, you know, he's less likely to win it.
Well, I'm going to say it right now. If Breakker enters the Royal Rumble as NXT champion, I think he's making top four.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. If he's
and then getting eliminated in top four.
Yeah, no, I think I would agree with you there. But yeah, cool. So that's it on the main event angle. So let's go to one of the last – we got two more matches here to talk about. This one I don't think there's as much to talk about, so we'll go with it first. We had Cora Jade versus Valentina Feroce. Before the match happened, we saw Valentina Feroce talking with Sanga backstage, asking him if he would accompany her out to the ring. Sanga basically said that he can't, essentially alluding to the fact that he can't now that he's realigned with Veer Mahan. Veer Mahan shows up on screen pretty much as soon as he says that he can't. And Valentina Feroce says that she understands and kind of slinks away, looking a bit defeated that her friend can't accompany her to the ring. Veer Mahan basically said, look, nobody respects you here. That's why I'm here, and kind of pats him on the back and they walk away. So Sanga did not accompany her to the ring for her entrance, for Valentina Feroce's entrance. She had almost like a fooge on her face the whole time. You know, lip was kind of, you know, down, quivering a little bit. She looked like, during her entrance anyway, looked like she was a little upset that she could not, be with Sanga during the entrance. The match itself versus Cora Jade was a Cora Jade match. I mean, it wasn't terrible, wasn't great. This match really, in my opinion, just served to remind us that, hey, Cora Jade exists. She's still relevant and she's still dominant. Other than that, I really don't have a whole heck of a lot to say about the match. You know, it was there. Wasn't bad. Wasn't great. Feroce, you know, I think I'm still high on her. I still want to see, you know, kind of what she does going down, you know, kind of going down the line here. I thought she had a good thing going with Yulisa Leon. Did she get released, Yulisa Leon? I don't remember.
She tore her ACL or something.
Oh yeah, that's right. She got injured. Okay. So now that she's got to do a singles thing, trying to figure that out. We'll kind of see what happens with her going down the line here. But as far as the match goes, like I said, I really just think this served as a way to get Cora Jade on TV, keep her in our minds as the main event, the women's division main event scene kind of goes in a couple different directions. Cora Jade doesn't have a whole heck of a lot to do right now, so I feel like this is kind of a good way to get her on TV and, like I said, remind the audience that she's still alive. Bruce.
So I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Cora Jade's turned a corner. I think maybe that Weapons Wild match with Roxanne Perez is what she needed. Yes, the acting in this was a bit much, her continued taunts of Valentina Feroce and whatnot, but I the one spot that did it for me that I was like, okay, I think she understands. I think it's finally clicking, and I think it's coming across. If she is, not everyone hits this well. Just think about Alexa Bliss. But when she used that DDT as her finisher and how she snapped it, I feel like that was the moment for me when I felt like Cora Jade's finally clicked. And for her, I think her character right now, the characterization, how she portrays it, I guess would be a better way to say it. Having the DDT as her finisher and how she snaps it, it's not it's not like The Miz or Alexa Bliss. It was just a nice straight DDT and looked impactful. I think that more than anything is going to serve her well with this heel character that she has, because I think babyface is too often trying to put too much flair on that move when it looks the best when it's just done well and when it's just done kind of, you know, traditionally. And I think she did that here. And for me, again, moving forward, I want to see if she continues this, because to me, it's finally starting to click as the viewer, which I'm hoping means that it's clicking for her as well. And using that DDT, I think, is going to be the key for her to move forward and grow, as instead of just being stagnant as this smarmy heel character who doesn't seem believable in what she's saying and what she's doing. I think just that one move, for some reason, I feel like has made a whole sea change in perception and of the potential I think she has, because she wasn't using this as her finisher before. So for her to notice that and make a change and make such an effective change, to me, signals more to me positively for her than I've seen from her on TV in the last several months. So good on her. And I'm actually looking forward to her next match and see how she continues this progression.
All right, so let's go and talk about the last match in the last couple of segments here.
Yeah, I don't want to touch that one.
Did I not talk about it? I don't know.
No. Yeah, I'm talking about following up to what I'm saying.
Oh, no, I'm just I had a very long day today, and I'm starting to hit a brick wall. I'm like, let's run for the hills.
That match wasn't much anyway.
Yeah, so we had Indy Hartwell versus Zoe Stark. A bit earlier in the night, we saw a backstage segment where Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons walked into the women's locker room, and they were a bit upset about having Zoe Stark was mostly upset about losing the title match last week, especially in the fashion that they lost it. You know, if you guys recall, they technically won the match, but then the decision was reversed because I think it wasn't the legal woman that got pinned, so the decision was reversed, and then Casey and Caden ended up retaining the titles after all. So Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons got the visual win, but they didn't actually walk away with the titles. Zoe Stark was kind of pissed off about this again tonight, walking into the locker room. Indy Hartwell took a bit of exception to this, going, hey, you know, you get no reason to be upset. At least you're getting opportunities for titles. And Zoe Stark was like, well, you're not getting them because you don't deserve them. And, you know, that Indy Hartwell took a bit of a offense to that. A bit of a kerfuffle broke out leading into this match here tonight between the two in the ring. Zoe Stark was accompanied to the ring by Nikita Lyons. Zoe Stark definitely played the heel here. You could tell she ended up taking a powder right before the commercial ducked out of the ring right before the commercial break. There was one kind of early match hint anyway. And as the match progressed, she just got proceedingly more and more like brutal and physical, I guess is a good way to describe it. You can't even see in her eyes. They were talking about it on commentary too. She was getting a bit unhinged, as they said.
She wasn't heeding the referee's count, mostly is what they were getting.
Yeah.
Stuck on.
Yep. That as well. She definitely had a bit of a fire in her tonight. And I think what they're doing is they're obviously playing up on the fact that she's lost a few matches here now. And she's kind of, getting pissed. She's not used to losing and kind of getting fired up. I'm curious to see where this goes between her and Lyons. Lyons was just trying to talk her down the whole time. I don't remember exactly what she was saying, but essentially, it's okay.
Finish her in the ring.
Yeah, finish her. That's right. Finish her in the ring. Oh, that's right. Because Zoe Stark tried to put Indy Hartwell through the announce table, and Nikita Lyons actually stopped her like, whoa, this isn't that important where you need to actually like put her through the announce table, like save that for a title match. She didn't actually say that, but hey, save that for a title match. I think we might be seeing a bit of a heel turn here for Zoe Stark. I'm wondering if that's going to lead to a feud between her and Nikita Lyons, where, Nikita Lyons plays the face and, kind of try to build her as more of a face of the brand, as it seems to unfortunately be what they want to do. Whether or not we agree with that or not, I guess doesn't matter. The match itself, I thought, was actually pretty good, all things considered. Indy Hartwell, as much as I love Indy Hartwell, her matches for me can be hit or miss sometimes. I thought this was pretty on point. Like they said on commentary, this was pretty physical, and it seemed pretty physical even before they brought it up. I was kind of like, wow, they're laying things in here. Not what I was necessarily expecting to see out of this match, but I was pleasantly surprised. Bruce, your thoughts on Hartwell versus Stark?
the heel turn for Stark, I think, was also signaled a bit with the title match aftermath. I don't know if it was last week or the week before or the Halloween Havoc or whatnot. Kind of in the, was it a web-exclusive interview they did backstage or something? But she kind of was hinting towards that. And then definitely tonight, even on the way to the ring and in the backstage, they were definitely letting you know that Zoe Stark is going to turn heel and Nikita Lyons is who they want to be the one as the face. Unfortunately, she might be the one that takes the title off Mandy Rose eventually, which, okay. And then with Indy Hartwell, I don't know if you remember, I'm not sure if it was last week or the week before, she had a match with somebody, and we made a note that she really started bringing out a strong style, and that really seemed to help quality of her match, because she's so much bigger than all the other women in, not all of them, but most of the women in the division. She's even bigger than Zoe Stark here. That her using a strong style just makes her offense look more vicious and realistic. And her finisher today, it was basically a variation of Will Ospreay's Hidden Blade, the kind of running back elbow to the back of the head. And that's what she hit here on Zoe Stark to end the match. And good on her, you know, for using such an effective move, basically, and from learning from others, and also making that adjustment to her style. Her character in the the earlier in the day segment, very justified and very, I think a lot of people could relate to the fact that, look, you got the opportunity, you didn't make the most of it. I haven't gone there, but you don't see me whining and pounding. I think a lot of people have gone through that and have seen others on the opposite side, so it's a relatable thing for her to do and say. And then one other note is that at the end of the match, Vic Joseph noted that Indy Hartwell is on the best single streak of her career. So I haven't gone back to Cage Match to see how many matches that's been. It's been at least two or three. So every streak has to start somewhere. So good for Indy Hartwell.
Every streak does need to start somewhere. I didn't actually catch that on commentary tonight, but hey, good for her. Good for her. Like I said, I love Indy Hartwell. Love the character. In-ring work sometimes hit or miss, but you know, like I said, I think, or like you said, rather, I think past few weeks she's definitely stepped the game up. All right, with that, I think that's going to bring us to the end of the show, guys. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up tonight on pwtorch.com for this show. And I didn't mention this earlier in the night, so if you want to be part of this show next week, you certainly can be. Email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, or join us live approximately 20 to 25 minutes after NXT gets off the air right here. You can call in at 515-605-9345, as Ryan did earlier tonight, and talk with Bruce, myself, and hopefully Kelly, who should be back in the host chair next week. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253, and you can find my report for NXT's show up at pwtorch.com and on the VIP side. And go Sixers.
Oh, go sports ball. Go sports ball, guys. We'll see you next week.